Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Timothy Washburn. He is the Chief Clinical Officer for Electronic Caregiver. Tim, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So for the benefit of everybody listening, it would be helpful to understand a little bit about you and how you arrived at this role as the Chief Clinical Officer for Electronic Caregiver. Tell us a little bit about your background and where you come from.
Sure. So I'm a registered nurse, and I've been a registered nurse for almost 30 years. Done a little bit of everything, mostly in the last 10 years, it's been in different leadership roles. In the last just under a year, my focus has been with electronic caregiver, specifically around how do we bring health technology to the healthcare field in a strategical, incremental, intelligent way to make sure that the clinician and the patient benefit from all of this wonderful stuff.
Fantastic. Who is Electronic Caregiver? What is the company and what is it that they started out doing and are currently doing?
Sure. So Electronic Caregiver is a New Mexico-based in the city of Las Cruces health technology company. We were started in 2009 by our CEO and founder, Tony Dorman. His original focus and experience was in home security, but he understood, he had a vision, and it was a good one, around the changes coming to healthcare, especially around health monitoring and in-home health. And so he created a few things. The first thing he focused on was a device that was mostly around personal emergency response. And then we have a couple other devices, one being the ProHealth, which is aimed at chronic illness management. And then our third, coming soon, Addison, which is a 3D virtual caregiver. The idea was, we needed technology that would work at home, and his vision was to create a company that would do that. So we started in 2009. Our first two products are out. We do a lot of work around patient safety and management of chronic illness, and our third, Addison, is going to be out probably late June.
So we'll get to Addison because obviously, you know, in this virtual world, I think lots of interest and, you know, maybe even more of an acute level of interest given what's been going on. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, this medical home concept and, you know, the delivery, the shift, I guess, from, you know, local delivery of healthcare into the community, into individuals' homes. You know, one of the things that I've often said is I don't think I've met anybody that's ever said I want to die in a hospital. We all want to die in our own home if we're going to die. You know, I mean, most people don't want to die, but you know, that's the comfort place. But there's a challenge with that. We have a system that is essentially geared towards this, you know, bring people in. This is where all the resources are. And obviously you've worked in that environment.
Sure.
You know, how are we moving that shift whilst preserving, you know, both the value of healthcare, the safety, or the clinical capabilities? Tell us a little bit about that.
I think that's a great point. One of the things that we hear from others in the same market we're in is our goal is to really replace clinical staff as much as possible with the technology. Now, you and I both know we're both clinicians. We know that that's probably the wrong approach. What we really want to focus on is how do we maintain that relationship with the physician, but augment his abilities to see what's going on in the home? You know, the technology is there. Pairing that technology with a good system that allows the clinician and the family to be part of that care team in real time, that's really what we focus on. I think the shift is happening out of frankly, some financial needs. But more importantly, I think the shift is happening because the age of consumerism has really approached healthcare in ways that it frankly didn't 20 years ago. Patients are demanding more at-home care. They are expecting more support and staying at home. They're expecting their care providers to do a better job of keeping them there. And really, that's a challenge for a doctor or a nurse practitioner because as much as you work with the patient, it can be very hard if you don't really know what's going on there. That's where our technology comes in. So I see technology not as something that's going to replace, but I think augment and improve outcomes, because you're going to have the kind of connection and access that is just not feasible in any other way. So if we were to look at this from the perspective of how do I empower physicians to do a better job of being a care partner with patients, there's only one solution that we can afford, frankly, and available today, and it'll be more ubiquitous as we go on, and that's technology. So I do see that shift coming, and I think it's high time, and I think it's exciting, and it has to be done right. But ultimately, our augmentation of healthcare providers will improve everybody's standard of living. And as you mentioned, it'll let patients stay in their home longer, which is where they want to be. And especially with COVID-19, no surprise here, we're getting a lot more press and traction with that message than a year ago. So that's how I see it changing. It's to help, not replace.
Yeah, no, I absolutely singing my song. I think I've always been troubled by the replacement concept, and also artificial. You know, when people talk about artificial intelligence, I think it's augmented intelligence, and, you know, very much the same in terms of virtual care. It would be wrong not to at least ask you this question. When you think about this, one of the complaints you hear from people is, well, great, so now I'm just going to be interacting with technology. I'm losing all my humanity. What do you say to that? And you know, in fairness, I don't have this view at all, but I know people, you know, have this sort of fear of this losing the touch or the humanity of care.
Sure, I think that's a rational understanding based on perspective. But the world around us changes. COVID-19 is a great example of sometimes that's an external force. Here's the reality. Technology, when done right, not only does not push people that way, I think it enhances. And I'll give you a classic example. We do this thousands of times a day. You know, our technology for remote patient monitoring, the Medicare benefit that anyone on Medicare has access to, as long as they have at least one chronic illness and have a relationship with a provider, have seen them face-to-face in the last 3 years. There's certain elements that have to be met, but that service, when combined with our technology and our service provider partners, does something really cool. So yes, technology's in the home. Yes, we're gonna take vital signs. Yes, we're going to alert providers based on out of bounds or out of threshold vital signs. Yes, we're gonna be able to push reminders. All of that is mechanics. But here's the really important part. All of that information isn't sitting in a cloud that is owned by some government agency that's simply there and not really accomplishing anything. All of that actionable data in real time is going to that provider, that person who is going to call you on the phone and say, Mr. Washburn, I see your systolic blood pressure was 190. Are you okay? So it isn't that technology is limiting the interaction. What it's actually doing is allowing us to, in real time, interact as needed based on the needs of the patient. Now multiply that times 1,000 or 10,000. You're now able to have that real-time actionable data get to the right person to immediately interact and provide that level of support that without that, they might not even know they need to. And at the same time, get that same information to the family. So now the daughter in New York who's worried about their mom with CHF, she can see if mom is taking her weight. She can see what that weight is. It actually provides a bridge and a connection. The technology is a platform. The secret sauce, the thing that matters, is all of the connectivity and the care management around that data in real time. So I think it's exactly the opposite, though. I understand that there are those with that perspective. How do you manage that? You be honest, and you have shows like this, and you talk to people like us who can really help folks understand it is about what's right and how to do it right, not the technology. Technology is in some ways the easy piece.
Yeah, it's interesting. I spent a long time sort of remote interacting with my mother. She was in a different country. You know, I was essentially delivering care, although I wasn't her formal physician. It didn't matter that I wasn't. I was, you know, you can't help that as any clinician on this planet knows. And it, you know, it allowed me that sort of personal connection in a way that I couldn't. What this reminds me of is very much a sort of sea of people that are in the dark. Mm-hmm. And what you're allowing for is this ability to shine the spotlight onto the individual that needs the attention now. And it keeps moving because that changes over time. You essentially bubble the people up and allow the limited resource in that spotlight to focus, people can attend. And what I really like is that integration of the family, because that for a long time was the missing part. It wasn't that we as clinicians didn't want that. We just didn't have the capacity to communicate, and mum certainly wasn't going to call son, daughter and say, hey, you know, this is a, they would never do it. At least my parents never did. They would never tell me anything that was wrong. You know, everything was perfect, although I could tell it wasn't, you know. So this fantastic opportunity, I think, with data and the connectivity that pulls people in. So you've essentially built a platform that's not just directed at clinicians. It pulls in the community, as it were, which it goes beyond even the family. Is that true?
It can, you know, we're able to leverage that technology to connect other members of the care team. So, you know, think about it. I think about it like this. We know that engagement is that tricky thing in healthcare. We have patients who will not engage. They will continue to smoke and drink, and it is what it is. We have patients who are so incredibly engaged that they really manage themselves, and that's fantastic. You know, we need to look at technology as this tool in our toolbox, but there's really 7 or 8 tools, right? Depending on what the patient needs. Sometimes you need a wrench, sometimes you need a screwdriver. We look at our platform as we can really tailor that to the needs of the patient. Mm-hmm. And the focus is not telling the patient or the doctor what to do or to use AI to diagnose. That is, you know, that's that. Then you get in the realm of, I guess I don't need a doctor if I got some sort of AI machine that can do that. That is not our focus at all. Though we certainly look at data in terms of clinical decision support, it's reasonable to help a provider sort of parse through what's important, what's not, see trends they might not see if they don't have computer access. But engagement is that thing that matters. We know that if you engage the patient and the family and the caregiver, CMS has identified that good care coordination for chronically ill has been shown to work. I mean, they've actually admitted it. That's why they expanded remote patient monitoring. The trick is you balance the technology and the system with the people in a way that lets them engage. And then you implement that, and then you just support them. And we've seen some really amazing anecdotal and some specific data around the right platform that encourages engagement works. It's not just an expensive doorstop, which technology can be when you use it wrong. Just saying.
You have a nurse. I have a drawer full of that kind of technology because I'm a super geek at the front end of this stuff. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Timothy Washburn, the Chief Clinical Officer for Electronic Caregiver. We were just talking about the value proposition and the extension and, you know, the real supporting act that technology can play to extend the care family, as it were. We touched at the early part of this discussion talking about Addison, which is your sort of new innovation concept. Tell us a little bit about that. What is it, and why is this exciting?
Sure. So Addison is going to add a camera and a voice and a level of engagement as a 3D sort of human-like, but not too human, not too cartoonish, human-like avatar that will actually be able to interact through voice and touch to patients, be able to visualize things like gait balance, changes in gait, visualize the ability to take pills, make sure that you swallowed them. We look at Addison as the next frontier, something that patients can fall in love with, because Addison isn't just an avatar. She has her own scene on the screen, and if it's raining outside in her home, it'll be raining. So not only avatar, but all the things around it to really focus on that engagement piece. If you can engage with someone and you can, you know, we're all dealing with chronic illness or other things, but She'll be able to do things like teach you how to do yoga. She'll be able to answer questions. So you can literally do Alexa through Addison. She can play Pandora for you. So the idea is, if I'm an elderly person, we have equipment that's very good at chronic illness management. And that is the foundation of Addison. But Addison, the visual and microphone piece, will add all of that other passive monitoring stuff and really do something pretty cool. We talked earlier about we want to have a platform that can get real-time actionable data to clinicians and family. So now add that capability. And now when there's a change in gait, we can let the doctor know, you know what, Tim Washburn has got a change in gait. You might want to call her. If Tim Washburn isn't swallowing pills, even though he's saying he is, we can let folks know. So the idea is we're going to take it to the next level. Addison is going to do everything our basic chronic illness can do when it's included. But all that other passive monitoring, all the ability around reminders, all of the social interaction, the ability to go beyond that, eventually to even get your discharge plan from the hospital, unpack it at home and show it to you. I mean, right now, if you go to the hospital, everybody gets the 30 pages of discharge instructions and nobody reads them, especially the nurses and doctors. We're terrible patients. We immediately throw them away. We'll actually be able to put that in there too. So just think about it as really a virtual caregiver, right? That's what she is. And a lot of the functionality we've talked about will be something she can do. But importantly, she will still be the one that's connecting you to the doctor for that diagnosis, for that that next care planning evolution. We don't ever intend to replace doctors and nurses. We don't have enough and we probably never will. But Addison is going to add that layer of functionality that we don't have without her, that doesn't exist anywhere else, but will truly give eyes on some of the things happening with those patients to family and providers. So it's really exciting. There's all kinds of other things she'll be able to do, but I think related to this conversation, those are the critical things for providers and folks to understand.
So Addison comes with essentially an extra set of sensors that allow for sort of capture of information, and then an outbound interaction that is designed to sort of, I don't want to say mimic is the wrong word, but replicate some of the interaction that we have as human beings with other individuals.
Sure.
What I find interesting about these avatars and these interactions is that it turns out patients are more honest with them. Did you know that?
I did. It is funny what you learn when you ask the right question.
Right. It's extraordinary. And even though people know that that avatar is, you know, technology and the technology is reporting back that content and somebody is then going to sort of, follow up on that, we get more sort of honest answers. And it's just interesting to me that it's a positive effect from all of this. And, you know, it's not a replacement. I think that's the key aspect from my perspective. It's not, oh my goodness, this will be your caregiver now.
Sure.
No, this is your 24/7 caregiver that very few people can afford, but right. Many people would like, in a way that, you know, gives them those prompts. And, you know, I'm imagining this as a sort of proactive engagement at times, especially if you've got sensors. And, you know, I'll take it to a little bit of an extreme and say, if they can sense that you're going to the fridge to pick out a snack that you shouldn't be, maybe, are you sure you should be doing
that? Yeah. You know, engagement and compliance, you know, I remember it used to be cool to say patients were non-compliant. You can't say that anymore. You're not even supposed to call them patients. I'm dating myself clearly. But we know that non-adherence related to engagement is very often actually not really the patient's fault. I mean, if you give a diabetic patient discharge instructions and they don't have the resources to eat right, you should not be surprised that their glucose is out of control. So we really envision Addison as this. It's going to do the basic stuff, but over time, she's really going to be connected to community resources, and she's going to be able to connect with the family. And the goal is, can we provide a platform, an experience, a way to engage that actually supports optimized health? Now, we know we're doing that with our ProHealth, our smart hub. We know that we're going to be able to do a lot more when we have a camera and a far field mic, obviously, with Addison. But it won't end there. I mean, again, technology as a platform and a tool is only as good as its capacity to impact someone's health, environment, engagement, satisfaction, wellness. I mean, literally, we have the ability to do behavioral health assessments already, and Addison will be able to bring that to a direct to your screen, asking you questions, and it's all HIPAA compliant, all that stuff. But let's stop talking about this as the one or two things we need to do for a patient, though that's a good start. And let's start talking about this as the environment of care for the patient. Where does technology fit for a given patient? Well, it's going to vary a little bit, right? So you know, the easy thing to do is say, hey, we'll give everybody the same thing. And you and I both know the impact of that will be a lot of waste in some places and not enough in others, because we've already, I think, tried that in our healthcare system, to be honest. The ability to customize that is something Addison, we already do that with ProHealth, but Addison will bring that to the next level too. So yeah, I think that we found that people like to engage with our stuff. We did a study just on our Premier, which is our most basic, no vital signs product. Still had a personal emergency response, still had a way to hit a button and connect with a caregiver with that cell-enabled device. So you didn't have to remember the phone number of the doctor. You didn't have to get on your smartphone. You didn't even need a phone. You could literally hit a button and connect with a healthcare provider. We did a small study with just the Premier that has just that capability. We decreased readmissions by 47%. So here's my take on it. You know, I think the patients do a really good job many times, but I don't think they always know. But more importantly, I don't think they always have access in a way that allows for engagement to fit into their lives. Turns out, they're only in the doctor's office, what, 1% of the time? What are they doing the other 99%? And right. When you need somebody, you need somebody. The harder you make it for engagement, not surprisingly, the less they engage. Simple math.
Absolutely. So a couple of minutes left. You know, the topic of the day, week, year, century, I suspect, is COVID-19. And I think an opportunity to sort of deliver value into that space.
Absolutely. So, you know, in our own workplace, we initiated actually a couple of weeks ago. So I like to think that my clinical background helped me be a little bit ahead of the curve. And so we implemented basically an employee protection plan with our ProHealth. And we can do this for others too. But the concept is we can screen folks, at least for temperature, to get a sense in their home before they come into work. And here's what we found. We've had a couple of employees who actually had a temperature. So everybody says stay home if you're sick and if you don't feel good, all that stuff. But we have data on patients or employees that say, you know what, you're at risk. Your temperature's up. The supervisor gets that notification automatically, can see that temp, calls that employee, goes over the CDC questions, is not reinventing the wheel, right? And really, we are on the side of caution, but we've had a couple, three now folks that we're not sure, but because we could screen, because we have the open dialogue, because that's happening at the home, we don't have them in the building, which means that our risk of spread and all the bad things that can happen are lowered. We do that kind of stuff all the time. And if you think about COVID-19, remember the people at most risk, we think, are the elderly. We already have a remote patient monitoring benefit through Medicare. We don't have to reinvent this wheel. We can literally use existing funding and technology to also help manage and optimize wellness and look for symptoms. So we're well prepared for it. It's a horrible tragedy, but we as a health system will have to adapt. And it's probably a good thing that we have to. The next will come.
So I think exciting times in a number of perspectives. I think there's going to be this big shift into the home healthcare space and keeping people outside of hospitals. We've had that before, but I think it's going to be accelerated as a result of COVID-19. Here's a technology that sort of facilitates that. I think, you know, offers some additional insight. So you've got the temperature, but potentially some other things. Tremendously exciting time. I'm, you know, look forward to watching this and seeing how things develop. Unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. It just remains for me to thank you, Tim, for joining me on the show. It's been a delight. Thoroughly enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you. Same here. It's been a pleasure. And we look forward to continued interaction and working with you to help folks.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.